Good morning. Glad to have all of us together worshiping in the Lord. And I don't know if John picked his songs out before he got here this morning or after, but Standing on the Promises went very well with my talk this morning. And coincidentally, 9:57, I did ask John to lead when we're concluded this morning, because I think we're all pretty familiar with the hymn, "This World Is Not My Home." And not going to read all the verses, but the first verse reads, "This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore." And so this morning my thoughts are not going to come from the words of the lyrics of the song, but we're going to think about that concept about our world, this world not being our home. And we're going to look at how we should be working to maintain our faith, because while this world is not our home, we are in this world right now. And there are challenges and there are struggles for us to continue to remain faithful and have our faith be strong and proclaim the gospel when our culture overwhelmingly has rejected the Christian message in every way, shape, or form. And this morning, maybe we can learn a little bit more how we can live in this world that has turned itself against the Lord, has rejected everything to do with Him. And hopefully it'll help us maintain our hope for the life that we're working towards after this life, and encourage us to keep pressing forward even in the face of all the hardships and the rejections that come by being a member of His flock. And so in the book of 1 Peter, Peter is writing to Christians who are dealing with similar circumstances of living in a world that is not pleased with them. And so if we look at 1 Peter chapter 2, 11 and 12, it reads, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." If you want, I would just keep your thumb in there or whatever, because we're going to focus most of our thoughts here this morning on these two verses. And so the identity that the Apostle Paul is describing, well, for those in the first century and equally for us today, is a very valuable identity. And depending upon the translation that you use in 1 Peter chapter 2, we see Peter calling the Christians to whom he is writing, calls them sojourners or exiles or foreigners, strangers, immigrants, aliens, pilgrims. There were about five or six versions that I looked through to see what words were used. So I'm pretty confident that whatever you're using, you can find a word that is there. But I think you can easily get the point that Peter is making here. And he had used similar wording earlier in his letter. It's important for us to understand that one of the things God does is He always wants us to be aware of who we are and how we may be perceived. He wants us to know who we are, because if we know who we are, then that will help us live the way we need to be. It'll help us be prepared. It'll help us know how we will be perceived and how we will be accepted among different people in the world. And too often we kind of maybe miss these little cues here that are given to us, but we should focus that this is not where we are aiming to be. And the first picture states something very important to us. We're a stranger, we're an exile, you're a foreigner. This is just a land that you are just a passing through. It is not the destination. It's how we get there. Most importantly, though, is we don't belong here. That's not what we should be focusing on. But this picture, this analogy that's being used here, really doesn't make any sense unless you are a believer that there is something beyond this life, that you believe that there is an eternity waiting for us. Without that concept in your head, it doesn't make any sense. So for you to understand that, you have to believe that there is something awaiting us as we pass through this life. And that's ultimately the problem. If you don't believe in eternity, then you're not going to see yourself as a stranger or an exile or as someone who doesn't belong. If we don't see ourselves going somewhere beyond this physical earth, then we're going to live our life for the world that we do know and the only one that we expect to know. And that perspective determines if we're living for this world or the world that is to come for us. And all of this means is that you are not at home. This is not some place that you should be living for. It should not be a place that you are satisfied to be. And so this identity is going to be very important for everything that we do in the world. This is not our home. We don't belong here. We've been made for another place. A place has been made for us, and we should be striving to do what we need to do. We're strangers here until we go to our final home where we would not be strangers. But we need to notice here what Peter is saying in verse 11. He says, when you understand your identity as a stranger, you have to abstain from everything that you're going to find in this world, especially those things that are going to prevent you from gaining your home. Your urge to, he says, there's going to be a war waging against your soul from the sinful desires that are present all throughout our lives here on earth. And that's really the most important thing for us to consider here, that if we're not from here, we shouldn't try to make it our home. It shouldn't be what defines us. We shouldn't be going and getting the touristy hats or whatever, you know, because that's not what we don't want to be from here. And so, since we don't live here, we can't act that way. And so we have to think about, well, what is it that's pushing us to want, you know, what is pushing us to act like we're from here? And it's what Peter says here, it's the desires that are pushing against us, the desires that are wanting you to make this your home. And it's the desires that are waging a very important war against your soul. And so you have to ask yourself, do you feel like you're in a battle against your desires? Do you feel that there's a war taking place in you, pulling you from one side to the other about how you want to be living your life, about the desires that you may have to do what's right and your desires to do things that you know are wrong? Now, you're not unique when you feel this way, and really you shouldn't feel like, you know, bad that you are waging this war against your desires, because Peter says it's going to happen. So don't feel like you're sinning by having this war, because you're not unique in that sense. Peter says that your sinful desires and the passions of your flesh are absolutely going to be warring against you. No one is immune to that, but it's up to us to make sure that we can overcome it. In fact, really, if you think about it, you should be very concerned if you find yourself not struggling with the desires. Because if you're not struggling, it means you've given over to them. They've taken control, and there is no war anymore because you're in agreement with those desires. And so Peter's telling us here there's going to be this battle inside our hearts and our souls about what we should be doing. Society tells us that we should just give in and do whatever we want. And I'm going to steal a point that Mike makes, and it both shows our age. There was a commercial, and I actually went and looked. It was for Schlitz beer that said, you should go for the gusto. And the point is, you should do what you want. You are being encouraged to do that. Do what you like. Do what you want. Just go for it. There's no restraint against you from doing that. But that's not an attitude that a Christian should even entertain, let alone make a part of their life. We are to war against these pressures to do these things that society puts upon us. We should have a war inside, and we should have a war with those outside of our bodies. And we are to resist this, and we are to live our lives in such a way that we can inherit our permanent and eternal home. I want us to see that if we do give in to these desires, then we're giving up any claim to this home that awaits us, that we're promised. But if we give in, we are living for this world. Now, oftentimes people will read a passage like this and see we're worrying about the desires of the flesh or so forth, and think of it from a purely sexual connotation, but really it's not. It means so much more. It means it's we're talking about speaking evil about someone. We're talking about venting our anger. We're talking about losing our self-control. We're talking about selfish thinking, selfish ambition, taking advantage of our neighbor. It's talking about envy. It's talking about jealousy. It's talking about drunkenness or just being divisive, being a troublemaker. It's talking about not loving our neighbors as ourselves. And it's just talking about strife that comes about by living a life that is totally selfishly being lived. These are the passions of our flesh that we're making war against against our soul. And we cannot allow these things to become the norm for us. We can't allow them to rule over us, because they are battling to do that very thing, to take over us and to take control. And Peter reminds us that we don't belong here, and therefore we have to do battle with these desires daily, hourly, minutely. But you know what I mean. It has to be a constant approach, knowing that those desires will get out of control if we let up even for a moment. Now, going back and what we talked about in the early, about when Peter says we must abstain, part of that goes in you can't even dabble in it. You can't get right to the edge and try to straddle the edge of what's acceptable and not. You can't even get close to it. He did not say that we can occasionally give in and it'll be okay, you can be forgiven. That's not what he's saying at all. If you put it another way, when our fleshly desires are winning the battle against us, we're having our ability stripped away from us to fulfill our obligations to God. We talked about making obligations this morning and following through. Well, when we decide to become a Christian and we're buried in the waters of baptism, we rise up into a new life, that's an obligation that we've made to the Lord. And when we are letting desires interfere with that, then we are not going to be able to fulfill our obligations, and our goal of heaven will be lost. And we're forgetting who our identity is when we do that, and we lose our ability to fulfill what God has given us as far as a purpose. In verse 12, Peter tells us that we need to live honorably in this world. We have to live in this world, but while we are here, we have to be very conscious of how we are being perceived. Peter's telling us that there is a purpose for abstaining. It's not that so we don't have fun and that we can't enjoy our time here on life doing the things that we really want to be doing. But there is a reason, there is a purpose behind this, and that is that we need to live these good, honorable lives before others. And really, it's one of the most important reasons that we have when we think about it. When I'm doing my talks in the morning from the Sermon on the Mount, I didn't focus on the salt of the earth or the light of the world, because I think that's a pretty common concept that most of us understand. But really, that's what this is about. By abstaining, we can become that light in the world, because people will notice that we're doing things that other people don't do, or we're not doing the things that other people do. We're not speaking untruthfully to others or about others to other people. We're not complaining. We're not angry people. We're not slanderers. We're not selfish people. We're not haters. We are the people that the Lord has called for us, and that's how we should be acting, and that should be the image that people are getting when they see us as we live in this world. We have to live truthful, honorable lives so that other people have no choice but to take notice. And so we have to ask ourselves, well, why is this important? And that answer comes here at the back end of verse 12. He says, when they speak against you as evildoers, they will see your good works. You're going to live your life faithfully in this world, and you are going to be proclaiming Jesus to people. You're going to be trying to teach him to others. And Peter tells us there are people that are absolutely going to resist you. It's not that they are necessarily, it's not just that they're going to reject what your message is. They're going to reject you on a personal level. They're going to resist you any way, shape, or form they can. They're going to speak against you. They're going to slander you as saying you're the one doing the wrong thing. You're going to be accused of wrongdoers because of your faith. And I don't think you have to look at anyone that's looked in the news over the last year or so, you can think of many examples of people trying to do what's right, and the media and so forth pointing the finger at you as the person doing wrong. The world is going to say that you are the evildoer when you tell people about the sin that in their life and what that means as far as their eternal home. The world is going to say you are evil because you stand for the scriptures and declare a need for repentance and to reject the sin in your life and turn from it. The world is going to say terrible things about you and me because we hold these concepts. And when we say what God says, they are going to not want to listen. So we have to come up with a way how we can combat this. Well, verse 12 also mentions that as well. It says you're going to be able, people are going to observe the way you live your life. It will be noticeable. And you're going to have to live your life in such a way that it'll counteract the reality of how you live. When people say these things about you, your life needs to be able to be show just the obvious, just the opposite, I should say. They're going to say that you're an evildoer, but your behavior is not going to be able to match that charge that they make against you. They are going to challenge what you say because you are saying the very words of God, but you will disprove their charges by your behavior based upon those very words. In the book of Acts, we see this very thing play out in the life of Paul. He has all kinds of people making all kinds of charges against him, but Paul's response was that he had lived his life in all good conscience before God and people. Now, he did that, he mentioned that because he lived in the Old Testament, and he was living what he thought was what God was wanting. But now he had rejected that opposition towards the Lord, and he now was living with good conscience before God because he knew the truth. And his behavior at that point in his life did not match the charges or the slander that was being levied against him. And so what we need to do is to be able to reverse the slander. We should be living our lives so not only does our behavior refute any charges or any threats against us in that sense, but our behavior should be able to reverse that slander. Because there will be people that look at us as Christians and realize that, and they're going to hear what people are saying against you, and they're saying, well, John doesn't act that way. Joyce doesn't act that way. And people will see that, and some people will have their minds changed, not only about you, but maybe about the faith that we should have. And so we all are to live our lives in such a way that people are not able to say those things against us. Their charge will not only be undone in the minds of some, but even cause such a change of mind in some people that Peter tells us that by you living your life and making it clear that your actions don't fit the charges, Peter says that God will actually be glorified before the day of visitation. But on the flip side, what if your behavior isn't such that can easily refute these charges? What if you are just being seen as an angry person? Or what if they do see you as a slanderous person? Or whether your attitude towards life is just, you know, not full of love, but hatred of others? What if they see you as just a person that causes problems? Well, then our actions will validate the charges made against us. We can't say that we come to church on Sundays and we live a good life and then have our actions totally refute that and these charges that people will make because they want to expose you as a hypocrite will stick because you're not living that way. But as people of faithful people, followers of God, we should not return slander with slander. We shouldn't get angry when these charges come up against us because we should engage in a war of words on a human level. We should just keep doing good while they say what it is that they're saying, and it will make an unseen impact. Because while they accuse you, you're going to keep doing good. And you're going to let your actions and your good works speak for themselves. That is what people will notice. It'll be obvious if you are just living on, yes, there will be people that'll, when their first accusation doesn't stick, they'll go to the next level, and the third level, and the fourth level. They'll just try to make things difficult, but we have to keep living the life that the Lord wants us to live. If we do good before God and before other people, we need to make it so their accusations don't make sense. And their accusations are worthless. And so we're not going to fight because we don't live for this world. We're not going to fight for this world. We're going to be living for the world that is to come. And we're not going to give in to our fleshly passions. And we are not going to respond negatively when these charges are made. We're going to do what is right before the Lord and before everyone around us. So, looking upon this, we just have some things. So how do we live in a world that resists and rejects the teachings of our Lord? You know, how do we maintain our faith? How do we live with courage in this world to proclaim a message that we overwhelmingly know people get very angry about when it is brought to them? It just kills me. I was looking at something in Wikipedia and the time frame, and they think they're so cute. And they don't say, 2000 BC, it's BCE. Because even BC, they can't tolerate the thought that any time was based upon the birth of Christ. So it's before Common Era, which of course just so happens to coincide with the time that Christ was born. These people, they're offended by anything that would call them their lives into question. And so we have to maintain our faith and our courage to live in a world that is offended by our very actions and presence. And Peter just gives us these three truths. We have to remember that we don't belong. Every day we need to remind ourselves that this, we may have a nice home, we might have a good job or friends and a nice warm bed to sleep in, but that's not what we should be aiming for. Our goal shouldn't be just on having a comfortable life here. Our goal should be able to be on what is awaiting us. We are strangers that are just a passing through. Our hope is not here, and our lives should not be living for it. So he says we have to abstain from the worldly and the fleshly passions and desires that are in every one of us. And we have to engage in a war that is working against our hearts and our souls so that our souls can have that home eternal. If we keep our eyes on that home, then we can realize every day is another day closer to what happens. You see people in prison, they'll put a little tick mark to how many days they have left till they get out or whatever. Well, we don't know exactly when our life is ready, but we should be realizing that every day is just one day closer to that promise that the Lord has given to us. Peter also tells us we have to live honorably among everybody, and the way we live is going to validate how people perceive us, and it'll validate or it'll vindicate people's charges against us, or it'll refute them. This was one of the great sins laid upon the nation of Israel in the scriptures. Their behavior caused the other nations around them to blaspheme them and to blaspheme God rather than glorify him. their conduct was supposed to draw people to God. But as we were studying in Isaiah, they failed at that. They intermarried, they did what they wanted, and because of that, they were punished. And so we'd have to think about it. Is our conduct drawing people to us in that regard? Or are we not influencing people at all? Are we confirming the promise and the glory of the gospel that is awaiting us? Or are we being a hypocrite and discrediting anything that people may see about us in regard to how we live our lives? And so we need to remember that we were made for good works. Paul says that we were created in Christ Jesus for good works. That's in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. And we should be eager to do these good works. And we should be eager to be setting that good example so that people can take notice. I'll leave you with one last passage. Titus chapter 2, verses 7 and 8 says, "Show yourself in all respects to be a model for good works. And in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us." We need to focus on this saying as we begin this new week and rededicate our lives to living for the Lord and being that example. Now, as I stated, I asked John to lead this song, and as we look at these words, now granted they're not inspired words, but I think we all can agree the thoughts that are being expressed are ones that we need to focus on. So as we sing this song, think about how the world that is awaiting us is so much greater than this world. And if you're here this morning and you just have not made that decision to live for Him, and you are living in the world, and the world is where you are, and you're fine with that, well, I hope you also understand that this world may be your home right now, but your eternal home will be one of fire and brimstone and a life of misery, an eternity of misery. And I plead and beg you to reconsider and come forward and be buried in the waters of baptism and be arisen a new creature. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way, we ask you to come now and as we stand and sing.